Thus began the sojourn of Turin in Doriath. With him remained for a while Gethron and Grithnir, his guardians, though they yearned to return again to their lady in Dor Lumin. Then age and sickness came upon Grithnir, and he stayed beside Turin until he died. But Gethron departed, and Thingol sent with him an escort to guide him and guard him. And they brought words from Thingol to Morwen. They came at last to Húrin's house, and when Morwen learned that Turin was received with honour in the halls of Thingol, her grief was lightened, and the elves brought also rich gifts from Melian, and a message bidding her return with Thingol's folk to Doriath. For Melian was wise and foresighted, and she hoped thus to avert the evil that was prepared in the thought of Morgoth. But Morwen would not depart from her house, for her heart was yet unchanged, and her pride still high. Moreover, Nienor was a babe in arms. Therefore she dismissed the elves of Doriath with her thanks, and gave them in gift the last small things of gold that remained to her, concealing her poverty. And she bade them take back to Thingol the helm of Hador. But Turin watched ever for the return of Thingol's messengers, and when they came back alone he fled into the woods and wept, for he knew of Melian's bidding, and he had hoped that Morwen would come. This was the second sorrow of Turin. When the messengers spoke Morwen's answer, Melian was moved with pity, perceiving her mind, and she saw that the fate which she foreboded could not lightly be set aside. The helm of Hador was given into Thingol's hands. That helm was made of grey steel, adorned with gold, and on it were graven runes of victory. A power was in it that guarded any who wore it from wound or death, for the sword that hewed it was broken, and the dart that smote it sprang aside. It was wrought by Telkar, the smith of Nogrod, whose works were renowned. It had a visor, after the manner of those that the dwarves used in their forges for the shielding of their eyes, and the face of one that wore it struck fear into the hearts of all beholders, but was itself guarded from dart and fire. Upon its crest was set in defiance a gilded image of Glaurung the dragon, for it had been made soon after he first issued from the gates of Morgoth. Often Hador and Galdor after him had borne it in war, and the hearts of the host of Hithlum were uplifted when they saw it towering high amid the battle, and they cried, "Of more worth is the dragon of Dor Lumin than the gold worm of Angband." But Húrin did not wear the dragon helm with ease, and in any case he would not use it, for he said, "I would rather look on my foes with my true face." Nonetheless, he accounted the helm among the greatest heirlooms of his house. Now Thingol had in Menegroth deep armouries, filled with great wealth of weapons, metal wrought like fish's mail and shining like water in the moon, swords and axes, shields and helms, wrought by Telkar himself, or by his master Gamil Zirak the Old, or by elven rites more skilful still. For some things he had received in gift that came out of Valinor, and were wrought by Feanor in his mastery, than whom no craftsman was greater in all the days of the world. Yet Thingol handled the helm of Hador as though his hoard were scanty, and he spoke courteous words, saying, "Proud were the head that bore this helm, which the sires of Húrin bore." Then a thought came to him, and he summoned Turin, and told him that Morwen had sent to her son a mighty thing, the heirloom of his fathers. "Take now the dragon head of the north," he said, "and when the time comes, wear it well." But Turin was yet too young to lift the helm, and he heeded it not because of the sorrow of his heart.